Special Gelatin Hour. Rudy Valley presents Tyrone Power in a play by Noel Coward, Edgar Bergen, Bob Hope, Muriel Kirkland, Lawrence Desmond, and Tony Sott.
This is Rudy Valley and Company. As Graham has so forcefully pointed out, our company tonight is headed by the latest darling of the cinema gods, Tyrone Power, star of Love Is News and Lloyd's of London. With Miss Muriel Kirkland as his leading lady, Tyrone will be heard in a romantic interlude from Noel Coward's Shadow Play. Given such an auspicious start, we have done our level best to provide a surrounding show of high caliber. And we believe we've succeeded. The comedy assignments go to Bob Hope, youthful star of Red, Hot, and Blue. Miss Florence Desmond, newly arrived from London, where she occupies a position roughly on a par with B. Lilly's rank over here. And, of course, our own Charlie McCarthy, owned and operated by Edgar Bergen. As a personality feature, or what we've got into the habit of calling a news spot, we have Tony Sarg, celebrated master of marionettes. Once over again, lightly, Graham, for the benefit of tardy pupil.
The people of the hour, Tony Sarg, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Florence Desmond, Bob Hope, and in an old coward play, Muriel Kirkland's Tyrone Power.
Tonight's musical program is distinguished by three songs from the latest Astaire Rogers RKO picture, Shall We Dance? This is one of them, Beginner's Luck.
Casino, from Monte Carlo to Reno, they tell you that a beginner comes out a winner. Beginner fishing for flounder will catch a 17-pounder. That's what I've always heard and always thought absurd, but now I believe every word. For I've got beginner's luck. The first time that I'm in love with you. Gosh, I'm lucky. I've got beginner's luck. There never was such a smile or such eyes of blue. Gosh, I'm fortunate. This thing we've begun is much more than a pastime. For this time is the one where the first time is the last time. I've got beginner's luck, lucky through and through. 'Cause the first time that I'm in love with you.
They tell me that since Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy arrived on the networks, that there's been an increase of 26.5% in the production of ventriloquists' dummies at the factory. Harvard University has announced a course in ventriloquism, its theory, practice, cause, and cure. And magazines are again carrying those snappy little ads that once upon a time used to urge us to be a ventriloquist and amaze your friends. The cause of it all? Mr. Bergen himself. Edgar and Charlie.
While browsing in my library this afternoon, I came across the story of Robinson Crusoe.
Oh, did you?
Yes. It was once my most valued possession. Have you ever read the book?
No, I haven't. Why don't you tell me the story, Mr. Bergen?
Well, would you like to hear it?
Well, would you tell it to me?
Well, would you like to hear it?
No.
Well, I will tell it anyway.
Well, I figured you would.
But you must be absolutely quiet.
Oh, not a peep, not a peep.
Yes. Well, once upon a time, there lived a little boy.
Oh, that is interesting, isn't it?
A little boy by the name of Robinson Crusoe, and he lived in the village of Hull, England.
Uh-huh.
Now, Robinson Crusoe decided at a very early age that he wanted to be a sailor.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to his mother, and he said, Mama, Mama, I want to be a sailor.
He said that?
Yes. He says, Mama, I'm desirous of becoming a sailor.
Oh, he spoke good English, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
For a small boy.
Yes. And his mother said, Why, Robbie, she said, Robbie,
I don't think you better try that.
No. My voice isn't exactly in good form.
No.
But I shall continue.
Well, must you?
Yes. So she said, Robbie, you are much too young to become a sailor.
Mm. Did she always yodel when she talked?
No. No, you see, she was very sad at the thought of losing Robbie.
Oh.
And she spoke with a tear in her voice.
It sounds like a tear in it.
No. So Robbie waited until he was older, and then he said, Mother, I'm going to sea. Goodbye, Mother. And his mother said, Goodbye, Robbie.
Boy, she had a snappy comeback, didn't she?
So little Robinson Crusoe sailed away.
Ah.
And on into the tropics.
Yes.
And they ran into a terrible storm.
Uh-huh.
And the ship was tossed about for days and days on end.
On what end?
Well, I don't know.
Maybe both ends.
Well, maybe, all right.
Why don't you say so?
All right. They were tossed about for days on end, on both ends.
On both ends. Now you got something.
Yes, all right.
After all, if you're telling a story, Mr. Bergen, you know, Mr. Bergen...
Yes, I know.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Well, then there's no use me telling you.
No. Well, the waves continued to grow higher and higher.
Uh-huh.
And the little ship rocked and swayed and rocked.
Wee, 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 wee.
And along came another wave and the ship rocked.
Yippee!
And another wave.
Wee, wee, wee. I'm getting a little seasick, you know.
No. And then there came an enormous wave.
Here we go again, boys.
All right. Oh, it must have been 60 feet high.
Well, that's about 15 coming from you.
Yes. Well, it completely wrecked the boat, and the ship sank to the bottom of the sea.
Ka-thunk.
Yes. Every sailor lost his life except Robinson Crusoe. How did he escape drowning?
He missed the boat.
No.
Well, it's possible.
Yes. Robinson Crusoe was an excellent swimmer.
Uh-huh.
And he swam to shore.
Yes.
And there, on an island inhabited by no one, he lived.
Is that so?
Yes. Yes, and as there were no people, there were no laws, and there was no danger. So he walked the shore with impunity.
Well, he must have been a pretty good sailor, too.
No.
Who? Impunity?
No. He really isn't anyone.
Oh, just a loafer.
Yes, that's right. Well, there was no way for Robinson Crusoe to leave this island, so he decided to stay.
A very wise decision.
And so days went into weeks, and weeks went into months, and months went into years.
And that's as far as you can went.
Yes. Well, one day, as he was looking around, he saw smoke rising from the far end of the island. Now, what could it be?
A fire?
Well, of course it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess it.
But who started this fire?
Impunity.
No.
I always suspicious of that guy. I didn't like him. If I don't like a person, I speak right out. I don't care. I don't mince words. I speak right out.
It's all right. Yeah. Well, Robinson Crusoe went to the top of the hill to see. And what did he see?
The other side of the hill.
Oh, God. And down on the beach, there was a fire.
Uh-huh.
And dancing around the fire.
Mosquitoes.
No. Cannibals.
No.
Yes. Why were these cannibals dancing around this fire?
They were having a cannonball.
Yes, I know. But they had captured a man.
Oh, marshmallow roast.
Yes. They were going to have a cannibal feast on their enemy.
Uh-huh.
But fortunately,
yes,
the enemy escaped, and he was rescued by Robinson Crusoe.
Oh, that's nice.
And he became Robinson Crusoe's slave.
He did?
Yes. And because he came to him on the sixth day of the week, he named him after that day.
He did?
Yes. What did he call him?
Winnie the Pooh.
No. He named him after the sixth day of the week. What did he call him?
October the 15th.
No. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
I give up.
You give up. Yeah. What about Friday? Is that familiar to you?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
Hate myself for not knowing. I feel so. kill a perfect cad, don't you know? Oh. Well, what happened to Robbie? Finish the story.
I am not going to continue.
You what?
I am not going to continue.
You're not?
No.
Do you mean to say, Mr. Bergen, you're going to leave the entire American public in suspense until next Thursday?
I am not going to continue. Robbie, will you please rescue me?
Wake Up and Live, with Messrs. Vernie and Winchell, Alice Faye and Jack Haley. Never in a Million Years. A million tears if ever we were through. Never in a million moons could you ever be surpassed. And darling, for a million Junes, this love of ours will last. There would be no world for me if ever we should part. Once in every lifetime, someone just like you appears. Is there any greater glory, any greater thrill? No, never in a million years. Ever useful Mr. McNamee, in a few words of great import to one and all.
There's probably no other dessert that people are...
Dynamic fingers of Elliot Daniel at the piano, playing Maracas, from Cuban Suite Part 1, Maracas.
Thank you.
agreement with 20th Century Fox and the amazing Daryl Zanuck, we present the screen's newest romantic idol, Tyrone Power. Young Mr. Power offers the latest example of that time-tested maxim. The public, not the publicity department, makes stars. With only three important pictures behind him, Lloyd's of London, Love Is News, and the yet-to-be-released Café Metropole, Tyrone has acquired a following of impressive proportions. Not since Robert Taylor was with us, for instance, has one of our guests been so heavily besieged on all sides by feminine autograph seekers. To provide suitable words for the new great lover, we have employed the most expert assistants. Our words are by Noel Coward, a romantic excerpt from Shadow Play in which Noel himself has been appearing on Broadway all winter. And for Tyrone's leading lady, we have chosen one of Broadway's finest young actresses, Miss Muriel Kirkland, just back from a nationwide tour in Pride and Prejudice. And so, Tyrone Power with Muriel Kirkland in a few tender moments from Noel Coward's Shadow Play. Place, Venice. Occasion, a honeymoon. The honeymoon of Simon and Vicky Gaffer. Married now a total of 2 days. They've just finished dinner in their hotel suite above the Grand Canal. The scene is supplied with an abundance of appropriate moonlight.
Well, here we are. Venice.
Venice. A wedded to the sea, dear, with the ring. Like us.
Which one is the sea, darling? You or me?
Neither. My name's Victoria.
Victoria what?
Victoria Gaffer.
What a silly name.
I adore it.
That's because you're sentimental.
Fiercely sentimental. Over-romantic, too.
Oh, dearest darling.
The wedding went off beautifully, didn't it?
Brief, to the point, and not unduly musical.
Didn't Mother look nice?
Not particularly.
Oh, Simon.
It was her hat, I think. It looked as though it were in a hurry and couldn't stay very long.
Was that man who slapped you on the back your uncle?
Yes, dear. That was my uncle.
I'm so sorry.
He ran away to sea, you know, when he was very young. And then, unfortunately, he ran back again.
Do you think that those people we turned out of the railway carriage ever loved each other as much as we do?
Well, nobody ever loved each other as much as we do. With the possible exception of Romeo and Juliet.
I'll never forget the train yesterday. All those little houses flashing by. Think of all the millions of people living in them. Eating and drinking, dressing and undressing, getting up and going to bed, having babies.
When I was a young bride, I never mentioned such things on my honeymoon.
Things never say the same.
It was considered immodest to do anything but weep gently and ask for a glass of water.
I'm abandoned, darling. I can't wait to be in your arms.
Oh, dear heart.
It's funny, isn't it? To be so frightfully in love that you feel as if you were going mad.
Ever so funny. What should we do about it? Right now, I mean. Sit here on the piazza or drift?
Let's call the gondola right away and cut out the piazza. I'm a big drifting girl.
Good.
Do you think our front gondolier was nicer than our back one?
Well, not altogether. He had better teeth, of course, but then he was about 50 years younger.
Let's come here again in 50 years' time.
All right.
We can arrange to be carried onto the train. It will be quite simple.
Oh, but it won't be a train, darling. It will be a pointed silver bullet, leaving Croydon at 4 and arriving here at 3:20.
Oh, dear.
What's the matter?
We haven't quarreled yet.
Oh, never mind.
Oh, we'll have a nice quarrel when we get back to London, won't we?
Well, I shall sulk for a few days anyhow. I'm the sulky type, you know.
That's why I married you.
Now, darling, I'm going to be terribly serious for a minute. Will you bear with me?
Of course.
There's something I want to say to you. I've been wanting to say it for quite a while.
Simon, don't. What is it? What is it?
I love you.
You mustn't make people cry on their honeymoon. It's not cricket.
Oh, dearest. Everything's cricket if only you have faith.
When did you know you loved me? The very first minute, I mean.
In the garden, during the dance, I saw you and my heart stopped beating.
It was a most enchanted meeting.
Life changed its tune. The stars and moon came near to me.
Dreams that are dreamed, like magic, seemed to be clear to me, dear to me.
False became true. My universe tumbled in two. The earth became heaven. For you were there.
That song, they were playing it.
In the ballroom. I saw you in the garden. I stopped dancing.
I didn't know I had remembered the words.
I think I can remember every word we said to each other that first time. Can you?
Let's try. My name's Victoria. Victoria Marden.
Mine's Simon Gafford.
How do you do?
Quite well, thank you.
I suppose you came down from London for the dance.
Yes, I'm staying with the Bursbys.
What do you do?
I'm in a bank.
High up in the bank? Or just sitting in a cage adding up things?
Oh, quite high up, really. It's a very good bank.
I'm so glad. Oh, no. No, that came later. You skipped some.
Oh, sorry.
You're nice and thin. Your eyes are funny. You move easily. I'm afraid you're terribly attractive.
You never said that.
No, but I thought it. This garden's really lovely. Are you good at gardens?
No, but I'm persevering. I'm all right on the more straightforward blooms, you know. Snapdragon, Sweet William cornflowers, and tobacco plant. And I can tell a buttercup a mile off.
That hedge over there is called Cypressus macrocoppa.
Do you swear it?
It grows terrifically quickly, but they do say that it grows a bit thin underneath in about 20 years.
How beastly of them to say that. It's slander.
Did you know about valerian smelliness cats?
You're showing off again.
It's true.
Well, I can go one better than that. Lotuses smell of pineapple.
Oh, dear. Everything smells of something else. It's desperately confusing.
Oh, never mind, darling. I love you desperately. I knew it the first second I saw you.
Oh, you're skipping again.
I know, darling. Let's skip back to Venice.
Here we are.
Darling, there is something I want to say to you.
Something serious?
Most desperately serious. It's this, darling. We're here together, close as close, and it's the beginning. But we're going to be together for a long time, probably all our lives, so we must be careful. I want to reassure you now about later on, about any tricks the future might play on us. Oh, I know I love you with all my heart, with every bit of me. It's easy now because it's summer weather and there isn't a cloud in the sky and we're alone. But there'll be other people presently. We can't live our whole lives on this little island. Other people are dangerous. They spoil true love. Oh, not consciously because they want to, but because they're themselves. Out for all they can get. Mischievous. You do see what I mean, don't you?
You mean they might make us want them one day instead of each other?
Yes, but only a little. Not like this. Not all the way round.
I can't imagine even that. I'm very single-tracked.
Don't look sad. Don't even have a flicker of unhappiness. Not for ages yet, anyway. But whenever you do, if I'm bad or foolish or unkind or even unfaithful, just remember this. Because this is what really matters. This lovely understanding of each other. It may be a jumping-off place for many future journeys. But however long the journey, one's got to come back sometime. And this is the White Cliffs of Dover. Hang on to the White Cliffs of Dover.
I'll try. It won't be difficult, darling, if you're there.
I'm here, dear heart.
I see you and my heart stops beating.
It is a most enchanted meeting.
Life changes its tune. The stars and the moon come near to me.
And dreams that I've dreamed, like magic, seem to be clear to me, dear to me.
Force becomes true. My universe tumbles in two. The earth becomes heaven for two.
For you are here.
WEAF, New York. The Royal Gelatin Hour, Act the Second, in which you will encounter to your advantage Tony Sarg, Bob Hope, and Miss Florence Desmond, who enters shortly. Miss Desmond hails from London. We had the pleasure of her company in Hollywood 3 years ago during one of her too infrequent and much too brief visits to these United States. Since then, Londoners have seen her in a long sequence of pictures and reviews beginning with C.B. Cochran's Streamline. When we heard that she was on the high seas, vacation bound, we cabled, and here she is. Impersonations of the venomous or devastating Sheila Barrett type are Miss Desmond's specialty. She has three of them for us this evening. Miss Florence Desmond.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I say, Rudy, that word venomous rather frightens me. Do you suppose Katharine Hepburn will mind if I devastate in her direction a bit?
I'm sure Miss Hepburn will realize it's all in fun, Miss Desmond.
You really think so? You know, I do believe the greater the artist, the more broad-minded she is, don't you? I mean, after all, one has to expect that sort of thing when one is in the public eye, doesn't one, or does one? Could we have some music, please? A cigarette that bears a lipstick traces. An airline ticket to romantic places. Ah, don't you love going to romantic places? Somewhere where you've never been before. You feel as if your heart has wings. I don't know. These foolish things remind me of you. A tinkling piano in the next apartment. Those stumbling words that told you what my heart meant. A fairground's painted swing. Oh, I love fairgrounds. Laughing children, coconut shards, barkers, and everything. Oh, dear, I don't know. These foolish things remind me of you. You came, you saw, you conquered me. When you did that to me, I don't know. I somehow knew that it had to be. The scent of smoldering leaves, the wail of steamers. A lot of people think I've got a voice like a wailing steamer, but I think that's a matter of opinion, because you can't have a voice like a wailing steamer and be a really great actress. And I'm going to be a very great actress. I'm going to play Romeo and Juliet, and when I get to offer that, I should play Hamlet. Oh, how the ghost of you clings. These foolish things remind me of you. And now, as I haven't received any wires from Katharine Hepburn, I think I'll have another go at Hollywood. There's no need to tell you who I am. My fame rests on two golden pegs. My calves are my fortune in Phoenix. I'm noted for glamour and legs. They supported me in the Blue Angel. They led me to Gary's caress and gave him a socco in sunny Morocco and blew up the Shanghai Express. The devil, they say, is a woman of passion or Himmel and fire. But how on the level can I be a devil with no one to direct my desire? So I sigh in the garden of Allah, and in color they tell me I'm grand. But mein Liebchen has ditched me. The Schweinhund, and that's why I stand. Alone, von Sternberg has left me alone. Jawohl. Alone, a knight without armor can save my soul. And so to Robert Donat, I give my eyes of blue. Oh, yeah, and my apple strudel, too. My own poor face is my fortune, and I'm so rich that men adore me and women say I'm a rich. And then I was in London, police became unknown, for I could hold up the traffic alone. Thank you. Rudy, and now I shall require the services of your Mr. McNamee.
Graham, if you will, please.
Okay.
Mr. McNamee reporting.
Mr. McNamee, will you kindly imagine that you're an English radio announcer?
Do I have to have an accent?
Well, then let your conscience be your guide. Now, you are an announcer, and I am Mrs. Gladys Pop, the first British mother to fly over the North Pole with her baby. Go on, introduce me.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a special treat for you tonight. You will hear from Mrs. Gladys Potts, the heroine of the hour.
the first British mother to fly over the North Pole with her baby, Mrs. Gladys Potts.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what to say. It's all been so wonderful. The engine was wonderful. I suppose it is wonderful to be the first mother to fly to the North Pole with her baby. But really, I never thought that people would make such a fuss of me. I'm sure many of you mothers would have done the same. And I hope before very long that every British mother will be able to fly to the North Pole with her baby. The engine was wonderful. I hope none of you think I did it for the publicity. I just couldn't believe my eyes when I saw my name in the papers. I just had to do it. I thought I had to strike a blow for British motherhood and the British carburetor. The engine was wonderful. Lord Mary Jew's been ever so kind. Baby was fine. Of course, I used Mary Oil lubricating oil.
Excuse me, Miss Potts, we don't allow advertising.
Oh, I'm sorry for that. I suppose you'd like to know what it feels like to be over the North Pole. Just a British mother alone with her baby. Of course, we couldn't see the North Pole. We were flying blind. Clouds and everything. But somehow, I just knew we were there. And I got a sort of lump in my throat when I thought of Mother and England. And I held baby over the side. I said, there, Tiddles. I said, you'll be able to tell your children that you were the first baby to be sick over the Arctic Circle. Then I shut off my 365 horsepower Mary Watson engine.
Please, Mrs. Potts.
Oh, I'm sorry, Governor. And I sent up a prayer to the old country. After that, we came back. The engine was wonderful. I hope perhaps my flight may lead to a regular mail service to the Pole. There's nothing up there, of course. No conveniences of any description. No aerodromes, no nothing. But what I feel is, if Great Britain doesn't do something, other countries will step in. Though, of course, none of them have got an engine like my patent Mary Jew self-fertilizing
carburetor. Mrs. Potts, we shall have to cut you off the air.
Well, about my plans. Baby and I have had a lot of offers. I dare say we should write for the papers. And next year, I want to do my bit in making British mothers air-minded. I expect to do another flight. I don't think any mother has flown to Australia upside down yet. And Lord Mary Jew thinks that's the record that Great Britain ought to have. Anyhow, you can take it. I shall go on using British Mary Super Fuel, the Mary Oil Lubricating Oil, the Mary Jew Carburetor, and the Mary Mary Mother's Bite Name, price £175. Good night, everyone.
We shall cut you off.
Number two from Shall We Dance? Let's call the whole thing off. Judy Starr and I are going to give you an idea, a slight idea, of how perhaps Mr. Astaire and Miss Rogers would sing it in the picture. And I say either, you say neither, and I say neither, either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off. You like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, and I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off. But oh,
If we call the whole thing off, then we must part. And oh, if we ever part, then that might break my heart. So if you like pajamas and I like pajamas, I'll wear pajamas and give you pajamas. For we know we need each other, so we better call the calling off. Let's call the whole thing off.
You say laughter and I say laughter. You say after and I say laughter. Laughter, laughter, after, often. Let's call the whole thing off. You say Havana and I say Havana. You say banana and I say banana. Havana, Havana, banana, banana. Let's call the whole thing off. Oh, if we call the whole thing off, then we must part. Oysters and I like oysters. I'll order oysters and cancel my oysters. For we know we need each other, so we better call a calling off. Oh,
let's call the whole thing off.
Last week, we introduced you to a Radio City soda jerker. This week, we want you to meet a master of marionettes, the foremost American practitioner of that ancient art, Tony Sarg. Mr. Sarg is American by citizenship, not by birth. He was born in Guatemala, served as an officer in the German army, later worked as an illustrator in London. He is famous, of course, as an artist and designer as well as puppeteer. And if you have ever been to New York on Thanksgiving Day, you have seen his gigantic balloon animals in the annual Macy Parade. Like so many of the people we have interviewed in the Variety Theater, he is a gentleman who does supremely well something he likes very much to do. With a touch of envy and a deep bow, we present the man who pulls the strings, Tony Sarg. Tony, you know, I've been waiting for some 5 years to ask you one question. Who blows up those monster balloons you paint for the Thanksgiving parade?
Why, nobody, Rudy. They're filled with helium out of big iron tanks.
Another illusion shattered. You know, I had a picture of you blowing away in your studio until Mickey Mouse was 3 stories tall.
I'm afraid it's been a good many years since I've had that much wind, Rudy. You couldn't get an artist to work that hard.
Is running a puppet show hard work?
Why, of course it is, but it's fun, too. The only excuse for working hard is liking it. Then, naturally, work ceases to be work at all. Nobody worth a hoot likes to work. The trick is to fool the world into paying you to do something that's fun. I think you and I share the same secret, just how to do that.
I think we do, Tony. They tell me that marionettes have sort of got to be big business lately, a really important branch of show business.
Well, yes, indeed. When I started some 20 years ago, I had the field all to myself in this country. Today, I'm competing with approximately 150 professional marionette show companies. In addition, there are some 60 puppet show units under the WPA. And I would estimate that there must be at least 3,000 amateur operators at work. Yes, I'd say the art, business, insanity, or whatever it is, has caught on lately.
How did you happen to get into it in the first place?
Well, quite by accident at the beginning. From my English grandmother, I inherited a large collectible library on the subject of toys in general, including an article on marionettes that caught my particular interest. So much so that when I went to the British Museum in search of a book on how to make marionettes, there was no such thing. That was in 1912. In 1936, alone, they published 38 books about marionettes.
The museum failing you, what did you do then?
Well, I sought less academic sources. I found a puppet showman, Holden by name, operating in London Music Hall. I called on him and respectfully requested to be shown how it was done. He refused to help me, saying that marionettes were his great family secret, and a secret intended to keep. So I bribed the stage manager of the theater to let me work as a stagehand in order to get backstage view of Holden at work.
Did you succeed?
I did not. The maestro had a canvas screen all round the backstage designed to baffle the inquisitive eyes. Besides that, he recognized the new stagehand and made complaint in very uncertain terms.
So what then?
Well, I followed Holden's marionette show around from music hall to music hall, from Glasgow to Liverpool and back, squandering my scant cash on the front row seats. I had found out that by judicious craning of my neck, I could watch the operators of the puppets at work, and I still have a crick in my neck from doing just that.
And that reminds me, several of my friends who know you better than I do have suggested that I ask you to tell the cough medicine story.
Why, that, Rudy, is one of the three oldest stories in the world.
On the radio, Mr. Sarg, the older the better, so they say.
I see. All right, then. This is a London story best told in a heavy fog. The scene is in Hyde Park Corner. The only character is a man on a soapbox selling a wonderful little white pills in a bottle. A sure cure for coughs. This is what he says.
Ladies and gentlemen, this here little bottle. I have one of the finest remedies for all the diseases of the throat, laryngitis. All you gotta do, ladies and gentlemen, is to just take one of these little pills. Then you'll be positively cured. What's that you say? Take one myself. All right, I will. I'll take it out of this here little bottle.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I long to hold you, believe me.
forget you. If I could, I'd try, but what's the good? I can't lose that longing for
the cast of Red Hot and Blue taking a week's vacation over Easter, Bob Hope, young star of same, has found time to prepare for us another digest of stuff and nonsense. This is Bob Hope.
Thank you. Thank you, Rudy, for inviting me here. Thank you
for coming, Bob.
Oh, it's a pleasure to work with a fellow like you, Rudy.
It's a pleasure to have you, Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's an echo in the valley. But I feel swell tonight, folks. It's so near Easter. You know, everywhere you go, people are shopping around for Easter bunnies. Even my dad is celebrating. He's already got his Easter bun on. Oh, spring. It's wonderful. You know, the ball players are in spring training. The women are doing their spring cleaning. The fields are full of spring flowers. People are buying spring outfits. Next week, we're going to spring my brother. He wasn't a bad kid, though. Always made swell money. Had a little trouble passing it. But the reason they caught him, he teamed up with a sentimental counterfeiter who insisted on putting his girl's picture on the $10 bills. You know, I came near missing this program tonight, by the way. On the way up here, I drove into one of those gas stations that specializes in service. You know, one of those places where you drive in for 5 gallons of gas and they take out your appendix. I no more than had the front wheels on the curb when 5 attendants sprang up out of the ground. One of them grabbed the radiator cap, another one the gas tank, the third one looked at the tires, the fourth one opened the motor, and the fifth one dove in. One of them finally came over with a rag, but luckily I had the windshield down, but that didn't stop him. He went to work on my eyeglasses. Unfortunately, I yawned, and the first thing I knew, they pulled out 4 teeth. I didn't mind that so much, but when they started to give me a mud pack, I had enough. I said, "Listen, buddy, I'm in a hurry. Give me 5 gallons of gas." He said, "I'm sorry, mister, we don't sell gas here." And as I drove out, he gave me a check for $50. It was bank night. Oh, but I've got a new car, by the way. It's a cute little thing, too, my car. It's a new car. It does cute tricks. You ought to see it play dead on a lonely road. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. And I like this show here tonight, especially. You know, Rudy, I think you have a grand show, but one thing I can't understand, it's funny how they put Tyrone Power and myself in the same program. You know, I can't understand that. You know, the same type and everything. Two up-and-coming juveniles. I think he's not only a little more up, but a little more becoming, too. I was supposed to be in that picture, by the way, Lloyd's of London. In fact, it was a toss-up whether Tyrone or I would play the lead. I won, so they tossed again. It was a good picture, but I didn't care about going to England. And besides, who wants to make love to an insurance company? But you know, in order to even things up, they put me in a picture similar to Lloyd's of London. They called it Prudential of Pottstown. It was a nice... It was one of those Class B quickie productions. I think they made it during lunch hour. It had its premiere in a lovely little theater over here on 10th Avenue. Had a lovely premiere. And halfway through the picture, somebody dropped a stench bomb. And they didn't know it till the picture was over. But to coin a phrase, a funny thing happened to me this afternoon after rehearsal. A very pretty girl asked me for my autograph. I was glad to oblige, of course. But after I signed it, she looked very disgusted. And I said, "What's the matter?" And she said, "I thought you were Charlie McCarthy." That's Bergen's dummy. After I apologized for not being Charlie McCarthy, I got very friendly with the girl. In fact, I let her take me to dinner. She was very pretty, but a little plump. She had on red earrings, and from the back, she looked like a Greyhound bus. We went to a cute little nightclub, too. It was a nice little place. First sewer I've ever seen with a doorman. It was a little Russian play. In fact, the orchestra leader led the band with a salami. It's nice. So they had a wonderful orchestra there. Three pieces. Piano, flute, and riveting machine. Lovely, refined place. At midnight, the music stopped, and they had intermission while they carried out the wounded. In fact, one big tough guy walked over to me and said, "I'll bet you $5 you're dead," and I was afraid to bet him. But this girl I was with was really charming, an outdoor girl. Everybody gave her the air. She was very well liked at this club. They never had to wash any forks when she finished eating. She was lovely, though. She had so much bridge work, every time I kissed her, I felt like paying a toll. When we left the restaurant, she took me home to meet her father. There was a charming man, but he didn't have much hair. In fact, he combed his hair with a chamois skin. To show you what I mean, the girl told me that her dad had once fallen asleep on top of a mountain, and an eagle had sat on his head for 2 hours trying to hatch it. Since then, they've been calling him Hatchet Head. They wanted to hang him by his heels in the Paramount lobby as a chandelier, but he wouldn't go for that. He wanted to hang inside where he could see the show. Oh, and this girl was dandy. She had the cutest little brother. You know, one of those kids that want to sit around the parlor when you don't need him, you know? I said, look, son, your sister and I would like to be alone. Why don't you take a little walk? He said, "I'm tired. I've been skating all day. I'm sitting right here. This is my house." I said, "Well, look, son, here's 50 cents. Go see a picture." And he said, "Here's a dollar. Let me watch."
Charming manner, sweet and shy, little old bonnet set in place, and a smile on your face. You're a perfect picture in your lavender and lace. Little bit of business here, little bit of business there. Beth, is you've been window shopping all around the square. Little old lady, time for tea. Here's a kiss, two or three. You're just like that little old lady I hold dear to me. Scheduled to get the first Radio Once Over in Broadway's latest hit, Having a Wonderful Time, with the producer Mark Connolly among those present. Edgar Bergen, of course.
Flight 4 of the Valley Company to Miami Beach, Florida, finds us rather unhappy, as this is definitely our last trip to the glorious tropical south. Saturday and Sunday at Jack Dempsey's Supper Club, Monday at West Flagler Greyhound Track again, and then a sad farewell to Florida and back to you at Manhattan. Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Tonight's program was Little Old Lady from The Show Is On. This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.